This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
So let's see, that goes back to when I was 8 years old. I started pulling out my eyelashes one summer. My brother and sister and I were all stuck in the house with chicken pox. And our friends were outside riding their bikes. And I remember just out of boredom almost and frustration and just wanting to, feeling trapped, this feeling of being trapped. And I just remember pulling an eyelash and then pulling another one. And then before I knew it, I was in the downstairs bathroom. I remember looking and there were none left, just none. And I had no way to explain that to anyone because I look like a completely different person without any eyelashes. But I just said, I pulled them out. And I think at that point, my parents thought it was just, it'd go away, just ignore it. And it actually was probably the first inclination of my anxiety as a child. And it continued to get worse after that. So it turned into, after that summer of no eyelashes, then it turned into hair, then it turned into emetophobia, which is the fear of throwing up. Then it turned into severe panic disorder. So it was like probably the first kind of thing that happened to me to, and it's also, it was probably the first realization of being a highly sensitive person at 8, even though no one had ever told me what that was. So I pulled all the way up until I was 36, and I'd go through periods of not pulling, periods of willing myself not to pull. I remember when I was 25, I finally was able to take my wig off, and it was because I'm Catholic. And I kept a rosary in my pocket at all times and with me everywhere. And when I would have the urge, I would say the rosary on those beads. So it was a willpower thing at that point. It was very hard to control, but I was able to do it long enough to be able to take my wig off. And I had this short, cute little pixie cut. And that's the last time I wore a wig when I was 25. And then in my 30s, I tried all kinds of different, I belonged to this Trichotillomania Women's online kind of thing that this woman, Abby Rower, had founded back in the early 2000s. And that was the first time I was ever actually around anyone or knew of anyone else that had trich. So this is, you know, I'm in my 30s and I've never even talked to anyone else that had it. So that was kind of a really big step in my healing, was being around and talking to other people that had this. And then when I was, after I had my second child, I was 40. And when I was nursing is when I really started to get out of control with my pulling again. And I was afraid that I was going to have to wear a wig, and I wanted to keep nursing. And I remember one night being exhausted and Googling how to cure trich with out drugs and stumbling on EFT, which is referred to as tapping. It stands for emotional freedom techniques. And I found some YouTube videos on how to do it. And it helped me right away, like nothing else has ever helped. I didn't pull my hair for 3 months. And then after that, I started pulling. It was around Thanksgiving time and a stressful time for families, especially my parents are divorced. It was always very stressful in my house. And I started pulling again. And I thought I must be doing something wrong. So I found someone local here who ended up being my trainer and mentor. She is in Strongsville, Ohio, and I'm here in Cleveland Heights, and her name's Betsy Muller. She ended up being my trainer, and I thought, even if I don't stop doing this, I'm at least going to help people who have this when I get certified. And that's what I do. Although I was able to stop pulling myself, I still help people that want to pull less, that just want a way, a tool to manage their pulling. So that's kind of where I am now. My practice is I'm an accredited certified EFT practitioner and also a clinical hypnotherapist. And I mostly see people that have BFRBs or phobias or panic and anxiety, because these are all things that I was able to clear by using EFT. And they're things that I'm very familiar with. So it's kind of, I hate to say all of that was a blessing in disguise, but right before we started here, Barbara and I said, all we do all day is talk about hair, which is fine.
When you first were pulling out your eyelashes, from that moment up until you found out the name of the disorder, how long was that?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So it was a long time. I was, when I was eight, that probably went on until my mother never took me to see anyone about it until my head hair started really showing, the bald spot on my head. And I was in fourth grade. I was probably 10 then. So probably 2 years had gone pa by with me just pulling and being able to keep it a secret that I was pulling from my scalp. And then when my mother took me to the doctors, I remember it was the dermatologist. And the dermatologist said I had alopecia and it would grow back. And I remember thinking, okay. And I didn't even tell anyone that I was the one who pulled it out. And I'm sure that my mother knew that, but I didn't tell the doctor. The doctor didn't even ask me. He just said, your hair, you have alopecia, and you might need, you might have anxiety, and gave me an Afrinil, I think, which I don't know if that even people, I don't even know if they still use that today. I'm sure they do. It's like as old as Prozac, probably. But I remember these little green pills, and my mom saying, "Just take these," and they made me feel horrible. I remember how bad the side effects were from that medication. It was an anti-anxiety medicine. It's an SSRI. And I remember not taking them, just telling my mom I was taking them and then just flushing them down the toilet. So that was that went on for years. I was probably, oh, I don't know. There was like no internet then. So it was like, no one knows what this is. And I think it was that same dermatologist that I went back to probably when I was 14 or 15 that said, this is what this is. And I remember thinking, I'm a freak. Like, this is who, nobody has this. Why would I be doing this? I can't stop doing it. I can't even explain it to anyone. This doctor must think I'm nuts. But it was probably when I was 14 that someone said the word trichotillomania, and there was nothing that could be done. No one has, I remember hearing it's not curable, mental disorder, horrible things. So that's, my first experience with it was, back in the 90s of even hearing that word. It was just like, okay, no one has this. I'm an oddball. What is this?
My next question was going to be, how did it make you feel to know there was a name?
Well, it was a tongue twister. I thought that means something's really wrong with me. I don't ever want anyone to know that I have that. I don't know anyone that has this. So it must just be something's really wrong with me, and try to hide it as best you can. So it was shame, hiding. It came to the point where I had to get a wig. There was nothing. Actually, my aunt is a hairdresser, was a hairdresser for a lot of years, and she knew about it. And a couple of my other close family members knew about it besides my family, my immediate family. And it was my one aunt who wasn't the hairdresser. My one aunt gave me extensions until I had no more hair to even glue the extensions to. So then my other aunt, who just felt so horrible for me, this is my dad's sister. Her and I are still very close. And so am I with my other aunts that have gotten me through this through the years. She took me to get fitted for a wig. And that was when I was 19, I believe. And wigs aren't like they were today. There weren't, it was horrifying. I remember being just horrified by the whole idea of this, but it was my aunt, not even my mother. And the wigs were so expensive then. They were human hairs. It seemed so expensive, but I babysat for my aunt and for my cousins. So I was able to work off the money to afford this wig. But it was horrifying. It was like the worst thing ever. I was in college. I thought, no one has this. How am I going to walk around? I mean, at least I still felt like people were staring because they weren't staring at me for having bald spots. They were staring at me for having a wig that was very obvious because they didn't make curly wigs. Like my natural hair is very curly. It was the straight wig, and I had to have bangs because you would be able to see the line. It just looked nothing like me. And when I look back in photos of me with that wig, it was like, oh my God, I look like a different person. It was, I don't know. Honestly, I feel like at that point people thought you had cancer if you didn't have hair. So it was better than, I mean, I still probably looked like I was going through chemo because I had this wig, but it was, oh, honestly, I don't know if the wig was better, made it better or worse. It was debilitating to say the least. It was awful.
One of the things I feel like people who don't have trichotillomania or other BFRBs, but there's a pressure that we feel to leave the house, right? Like, I'm sure you were not leaving the house without your wig. For me, it was the hair extensions, the dark eye makeup, the headbands. Like, there were so many steps just for us to feel comfortable to leave the house.
Oh my gosh, I've never discussed this with anyone. And this is so true. And yes, you spend a lot of time in the mirror, whether you're plucking the brow or the eyelash or the head hair that isn't right, or you're making yourself try to look normal. And it's a big process. There are so many things involved. I can tell you exactly the best eyelashes to buy, exactly the best eyelash adhesive to buy. I could tell you the exact right wigs, extensions, everything. I could tell you all about that. I could talk about it all day on a whole episode. But yes, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to get ready to even leave the house.
And I love what you mentioned about, was the wig helpful or was it more harmful? Because I can totally relate to that with my false eyelashes. And I would wear extensions too. And mind you, my extensions were not blended in. It was so obvious. Here's short hair, here's long hair. It was a mess. But that covering up, it kind of like fuels the shame. And it also adds another layer of this paranoia of, oh my gosh, everybody's looking at me. Everybody knows something's wrong.
Yeah, and it's really hard, especially when dating back then. I mean, I had long-term boyfriends that never knew that I had this wig, or if they did, they never said anything about it. We couldn't go anywhere where I would swim or where there would be. I mean, there were so many things that I avoided because of this. I remember one guy breaking up with me because I wouldn't go jet skiing because I couldn't. I mean, what if my hair fell off, you know? I mean, and this is a guy who I dated for months and months, and I couldn't just tell him. It was so debilitating to have the wig in a lot of ways. And it also kept the behavior happening because I had a way to cover it up. So I think that it was probably worse in some ways. And when I finally was ready to say, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore, I'm going to try to stop. I would shave my head to, you know, get everything back to square one, where everything was the same length and everything. So I remember probably doing that for, I probably shaved my head two or three times during that process, and I would tape the wig on like with this really sticky tape. So it would be taped to my scalp basically. And finally, after a few rounds of shaving, my head hair was long enough. And I went to my aunt hairdresser. We took the wig off, and she was like, oh my gosh, this is the cutest pixie cut. Let's just leave it. And I remember her saying to me, and it was my crutch, really, this wig, because I didn't even feel like me, even with that short hair. It was all my hair, and it was all grown in and beautiful and curly and cute. And she dyed it back my natural color, and it was, this dark brown and beautiful. I remember her saying to me in her salon that night, she had just a one-person salon, so it was just her and I there. She said, if you throw your wig in the trash right now, I'll give you $200. And I couldn't do it. I thought, and I really needed the money. I was like, I was just out of college. I was, barely making any money, barely making ends meet. I had my own apartment, and I couldn't do it because it was a crutch, and it was the only thing I had. It was like, you know what? And then later that night, I went home and I felt so good. I thought, you know what? I can do this. And I threw my wig and all the everything that went with it, the sticky things, the whatever, the special hair stuff that I used with it. I threw it all in the dumpster in the back of my apartment complex. And that was that. That was the last time. So I thought, you know what? I can't pull. Even if I wanted to, I can't now. And it was hard because after that, I had a pretty serious boyfriend, and I was living in the town that I grew up in, and he was finishing a grad school at the college that I graduated from, and he wasn't going to stay there. He just came there for grad school. So it was, if you want to stay together, we have to move. I'm going to get a job. So whoever gets a job, we decided whoever gets a job first, that's where we'll move. And he got an offer in Chicago, and that's where we went. But it was the very first time I'd ever been away from my family. It was a very stressful situation. We actually both got jobs at the same company. He was a chemist, and I was a graphic artist. And they happened to need a graphic artist at this chemical company in Chicago. So we both moved, and I was starting a new job and a new place away from my family. And it was horrible. It was awful because all I wanted to do was pull. But I had no wig, and it would be detrimental to me if I did and if I pulled. And I remember how awful it was to manage that at that time in my life at 25. Ugh, it was awful. It was a lot of stress.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today. And did you share with him about your trichotillomania?
He knew. Actually, I met him when I was wearing a wig. I met him prior to that at a football game, at a college football game. And then the next time I saw him, I didn't have my wigs. I had this short hair. So he asked me flat out because he knew some people that I went to high school with. And they told him that in high school I wore a wig, which I never knew that anyone even knew. So that was like horrifying for me. And I got made fun of a lot in high school because of the wig. It was bad. So he knew, and I told him, but he also, if he would see my hands up in my hair, like when we moved to Chicago, he would yell at me, and it was awful. And it ended up that I didn't end up with this guy, which is so, I'm so thankful about. He wasn't the right person for me, but he knew, and he kind of held it against me. And that was not a good thing. My husband now knows and was so supportive. I think you and I talked about this on my podcast episode. He said, you could shave your head. I don't care if you're bald or not, I'll still love you. So there are people that are accepting, and then there are people that think, why would you, they don't understand. So that was a really rough time in my life.
It is so challenging, one, to even share with somebody, but then to receive a reaction that maybe solidifies the negative self-talk that you're hearing, you're getting yelled at. I mean, it makes people never want to share again. Like, I'm so happy you shared with your now husband. I'm so happy that you started this business and you're sharing with everybody, because if you have a negative re like someone has a negative reaction, it could silence you.
And honestly, since I've been doing this work and since I've basically, came out, it's like coming out, basically. You feel like you've been someone else your whole life. And then you start talking about this. And it was really scary to be like, you know what? I'm going to do this for work. I'm switching my career completely to something else. And I'm going to have to talk about it. There's no getting around it. And here's social media, and it's all over the place. I just did it. I just said, you know what? I have this. At the moment, I'm not pulling. And this is what I'm switching my career to help people that have this type of disorder, this behavior. And I got nothing but positive feedback from people. Oh, we're so proud of you. You're just that's amazing. Your story is so heartfelt, and we genuinely feel for you. And so I really didn't, there was no negative that I received once I started telling people about my story and talking about it and doing my podcast about it. It was empowering more than anything else. And it felt like, thank God, no one thinks I'm nuts. And then people will say, oh, well, I have this friend who has this daughter, or my neighbor used to pull, or I knew someone. And then it's like, where were all these people when it's like they're everywhere. But honestly, having trick, you can spot people that have trick like a million miles away. You have this, I don't know, radar that you just know. And it's amazing how many people you can find or that you see just out and about that have trick. It's like shocking to me, honestly. It's like, wow, they're everywhere. We're everywhere, and there's nothing wrong with us. We're still normal. And most, like 90, 100% of my clients, I can't say anyone, that these are all smart, beautiful people that just have this thing. They're very, very smart, beautiful people. They just have this thing. And that's, it is what it is.
Something that I struggled with when I was keeping my trichotillomania a secret was I like split myself in half. There was a half of me that I hated, the trichotillomania half. I didn't want anyone finding out about her. Thought she was ugly, thought she was the worst, had no self-control, all the negative self-talk. And then there was the other part that was like front-facing, right? Here's me. Oh, I'm having fun. I'm just a regular teenager. Yes, I have all this makeup on and I quit the swim team. But hey, everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. It wasn't until I started sharing my experience that I felt like I could be like myself, like one version of myself. Did you also experience that?
Yeah, it is. It's really freeing. And we talked too about on my podcast episode about how I got this tattoo that says freedom, because I couldn't. I felt like I was hiding. I was this shell of myself. Like I couldn't. It opened up so much more freedom in general, just being able to talk about it, to be yourself, to not hide, to not care. That's like my motto is I hate is who gives a shit. That's literally my motto, because like I don't care what anyone thinks. I don't care. This is who I am. This is what I do. This is if I have a relapse, I have a relapse, which I have, and I did, and I was very honest about it with clients and on social media and on my podcast. It's just part of me, and I'm glad to be my real true self. And instead of hiding that for so many years, it was such a struggle. I'm happy. I feel like I wasn't the same person. And if I look back in photos of myself, like even with the wig, without the wig, before I told anyone, I look scared. I look like I could, and I have so many people. I have, and I can tell this about you too, Barbara. We have high frequencies. We're like we have high energy. I wasn't that person before I was able to be open about my hair pulling. I was someone totally different, but this is who I am, really. We vibrate at a high frequency. We're genuinely happy people. We like to be around people. We're very, I feel like a lot of people with trick are the same. So, and we have highly sensitive personalities. HSP, highly sensitive person. I didn't know what it was until someone that I was working with in my 30s. Her name was Abby Rower. I don't even know if she's around anymore, but I was in this like women's trichotillomania online university. It was like, I think I mentioned it before, it was like the first time I was ever in a group where anyone else had trich. And she said to me, "You're highly sensitive because of, I don't know, maybe the way I responded to something or something like that." And I thought, "What is that?" And she said, "Your central nervous system is just heightened compared to everyone else's. You take on other people's energy. You feel things when you walk into a room. You're very in tune with your own body and your own energy. And if something's off, it's almost like upsetting." And that's exactly how I feel. That's how almost I haven't met a trick client of mine that isn't highly sensitive. And it just means that our nervous system is just set up differently than someone else's. Like my husband is a good example of, he's a laid back person. Things just kind of roll off of him. He doesn't get flustered by things. And he doesn't get why I get like that. It's almost if a good example of it would be driving in the car with him. His driving makes me nervous because I'm highly sensitive. And I'm always like clutching the wall while he's driving, even if we're not doing anything specifically dangerous. It's upsetting. Or I'll go, when we're in the car and if he doesn't stop quick enough or something like that. And I've had clients that have that same reaction, that very intense emotion around anything that's in their periphery. Or if you could get drained of your energy very quickly if you're highly sensitive. So like you have to prepare yourself if you're going to into a situation where there's a bunch of people that are going to be taking up your energy. And there's ways to protect yourself from other people's energy that I do in EFT and also in hypnotherapy to protect myself, because other people's energy, when you work with energy, other people's energy can get on to you. And I highly sensitive people will notice that a lot. Even if they're standing in a grocery line with someone that's in a bad mood, it's like, if you're highly sensitive, you walk out of there and you feel like crap and nothing even happened to you. So that's how I can best explain it. It's not an affliction. Some people that I work with say, "I wish I didn't have this," but I've learned to use it to my advantage, to where, I'm very intuitive and I know when something's off, and I can trust my intuition and my body's intuition and just protect my energy before I go into situations that might be draining for me. So it depends. There's people that can really suck your energy called, we call them energy vampires in energy medicine. And I'm sure everyone has come across one of those once in their life, whether it's a mother-in-law or a friend or whatever, but they just completely, you're drained, like you have to go to bed after you went out to lunch with them or something. So this is how you'll know if you really have that type of personality, if things kind of something small would really affect you.
And then how does that play into, I can assume, but from your perspective, like how does that play into dealing with and living with trichotillomania? We're self-soothing from all these things and we're highly sensitive. Like how do they kind of go together or coexist?
I guess that there, I've learned to live with both things, and knowing now, like, what stimuli can affect my hair pulling or could affect my hair pulling in the past, I would be extra prepared of going into those situations or tapping beforehand or knowing or at least telling someone, "Hey, this is going to be not fun for me. And I'm just warning you that if I seem really quiet," or it's almost as if it's an emotional overload or like energy overload for people that are highly sensitive. And my husband will still say to me, "Why are you so quiet? Why are you so, when we're in a big situation or whatever?" It's because it's a lot for a highly sensitive person to take in like the energy around you. And we often kind of, it's not that we shut down, but it's just that we're kind of trying to get our bearings. And so I've learned to manage that and, putting some protection on myself, like verbally, you can say, I just want to put an energy shield around me, around my aura to keep myself safe from whatever negative energy could come my way in this specific situation. And just being very present with what's going on, because if that's when we get into the habit or the routine of the soothing behavior of pulling, because that's what you're used to doing when you feel this overwhelm or whatever's going on. So being really present and not tuning it out with pulling is something that you have to be really cognizant of when you have this behavior, because otherwise, everywhere you go, you could have your hand on your eyes or your head or your, when you're highly sensitive, because any stimulus can really kind of contribute to, hey, I need to calm my central nervous system. I'm going to do this thing that makes me feel calm. And I replace that by using tapping and other breathing techniques and exercise and things like that. So really knowing that, hey, this is who I am. This is what sets me off. And these are my tools that I use to get myself off this ledge, or so that I don't have a total disastrous pulling episode because of this one little thing. So it's hard, but it's doable. And you just being present is really the key.
I have a funny story that I'd like to share with you and maybe see what you would do in the same situation. So I was on vacation with my family. We're very close, and I got into the car. We had just seen a movie. It was great. Everything was great. I get in the car, the vibe is messed up. And I'm like looking around. I'm like, "What's going on?" I just could feel it, and I was like, "What's going on? The vibe is fucked up." Like I said to my family, and they all turned, they go, "Wait, what?" And then I think that they didn't even maybe realize, or I don't know what was going on, but when I said that, they were like, and like just acted normal again. But I got in the car and I said, "Wait a minute, this is effed up. I don't like sitting here. Why, what's going on? Is someone mad at somebody? What's happening?" And they completely, like, I guess snapped out of it. Maybe they were tired or something, but I
So one person kind of can, I mean, you felt that. So yeah, maybe someone was exhausted, tired, thinking about something else that was bringing them down, and it actually lowered the frequency when you got in the car. And honestly, since you were with your family, I probably would have done the same thing if I was with my family. But if I wasn't with my family, I would have been like, it would have been upsetting to me. I would have been polite enough to not say anything if I was, you could get on a public bus or whatever, and you're in this energy bubble until you get off. You just have to kind of protect yourself before you go into that situation, or you have to have your tools like, oh, I can tap myself through until I get out of this horrible energy funk, and brush it off me before, after I get out of there. Do some grounding techniques to get it. That's, you can do some grounding techniques. Even if you're sitting in a car, you can do some things that kind of ground your energy, and very simple things. So I'm glad you said something, because did it feel like that energy lifted right after you said?
it did. It was very awkward at first because I said that. I go, "What?" And it was like maybe 3 seconds of like dead air, just dead silence. And then it was like, "Oh, anyway, what do you guys want to do?" Like it snapped everybody out of it, whatever was the vibe. But yeah, I think it was worth it. I would do it again.
Yes, I agree. And if I'm ever in a situation where I feel comfortable with the people that I'm around, of course I would say something. Or you could just remove yourself if it's easy enough. If you're on a moving bus or something, maybe not so easy, but you could stand it. You could get through it with tools until, for you could stand anything for a small amount of time, I think.
I've never experienced hypnotherapy before. Tell me all about that, will
Yeah.
you?
Yeah. So hypnosis is not what people would see on TV or something. It's not like you're standing there with a pendulum and you're telling someone to act like a duck or do quack like a duck or do something weird. This is a very relaxed state. It's even deeper than a meditative state. And the reason it works so well, especially for people that have trick or a body-focused repetitive behavior, is because we have access to your subconscious for an extended amount of time. So while you're in that very relaxed state, which there are different phases that I take you through, there's this relaxation phase, there's a deepening phase where I'm counting you down from 10 to 1 to a very relaxing place that you're visualizing. There's a lot of visualizing going on. And then there's a suggestion phase where we can actually put in things that your subconscious starts to think about. And this is a cool thing because our subconscious is so in control of the things that we do, especially behaviors, any type of behaviors that are unnecessary, specifically hair pulling. And once we're in there and you're relaxed and you're totally cognizant of anything, if I ask you a question, you can answer. It's not like you're under a spell or something. You're just very, very relaxed. And we'll put statements in there, and I tailor every session to the client and what we're working on. You'll never get the same hypnosis session twice. And it might be something like, pulling my hair is something I used to do, but I just don't have the urge to do it anymore. And there's a lot of repetitive phrases like that. There's visualizations. And then I give you tools to kind of words that create a positive feeling at the end, towards the end of the session. So we can replace any negative emotions that maybe came up with some a positive energy that you come up with during the session. And then we end the session bringing you back to, perfect waking state and re-energized and ready to tackle whatever problem that was. And the cool thing about it is that a lot of things that come up during hypnosis, we can tap about after. So it's not like I send you on your way after a hypnosis session. The other cool thing is that when you do a hypnosis session, your subconscious, your neural pathways are still processing what the suggestions were that we did during the session for up to 10 days later. So your brain is like working on this verbiage and thinking like, what if I don't do that? What if I do do that? What if I didn't want, what would it feel like? And so it's a lot of times you can end up feeling better and better and better in the week following the session. So it's a really cool experience. I do self hypnosis for other things. So I record myself saying things, like, I don't want to eat so much processed food or sugar or whatever, and doing those kinds of things. Or a lot of clients have me help them jumpstart their exercise routine where there's a block there, they just can't get past it, and or eating healthy foods, all of that stuff. So you can use it for anything. It has no side effects. It's like tapping. You can try it. Some people are not hypnotizable, believe it or not, but I would know from a conversation with you prior to actually booking a session that you wouldn't be able to do it. And there is a belief in there. Like, if you don't want to do it, it's probably not going to work. Because when I was doing my clinical hours, my 14-year-old son, I had him, he's got a fear of needles. So I had him sit with me and tried to do this hypnosis session with him, and he wasn't having it. He was talking through the whole thing. He was like, this isn't working. I don't want to do it. And so finally, I just abandoned and thought, you know what? He's just not in the right frame of mind. So it's something that you have to want to do. EFT, you don't have to believe in it or even want to do it. It just automatically lowers your cortisol when you tap the specific acupressure points. So it doesn't either, neither of them hurt. It's just a matter of the hypnosis. There's a chance that you are not hypnotizable, but I haven't had that experience yet with any clients of mine, and mostly highly sensitive people are very easy to get under hypnosis. They go very deep very quickly. So it's a really cool thing to get to use and help people with.
What is maybe one thing that you are most proud of yourself, and then also maybe a moment when you're, doing your work that you're very proud of? So something you're just proud of for yourself, and then maybe a client success that you would love to share.
Okay, so oh, that's a good question. Let's see. Oh my gosh. Proud of. Probably for being a good mom. I mean, I never wanted kids in my whole life. I just didn't picture myself ever having kids. It seemed like something I wasn't interested in. I babysat my cousins and thought this is the most horrible thing ever. And then when I got our first dog, that she just passed away back in January, and we have a new dog now. But my first dog was like, we were just married, and I had this sweet little dog, and we were celebrating these birthdays for her. And I thought, is this all that there is just this dog? And I feel kind of bad. And so I had a shift in how I felt, and that can happen to anyone. And I had all kinds of anxiety and phobias and hair pulling before I got pregnant, and I still had them after I got pregnant and after I had kids. And I was able to still work through those things after my pregnancies. And I think doing the work that I do now in EFT and the work that I had to do in order to get certified, clear all my own garbage out. I mean, every little negative thing that ever happened to me from the time I can remember, I had to clear before I got certified. And it was, believe me, hundreds and hundreds of things on the list. So knowing that I did that work and that I have these tools available to me to help my kids is like, I feel like it makes me a way better mom than I ever thought I could be, because I can give these tools to my kids. I can help them different than, how I was raised. So, that change happened for a reason. I feel like I was meant to have kids, and I'm proud of the way I take care of my kids. And something business-wise that I'm proud of, well, a lot of stuff in my business, because I started my business from scratch. I really took a huge leap by saying to my husband, "Hey, I'm quitting my graphic design job of 20 years that I have a degree in, and I have a good paying job with insurance, and I'm just not doing that anymore because I found something that really helped me." So it was a really big step to do that. And I mean, I work and do stuff for my business that I'm proud of every day. My podcast, I'm proud of. I had an kind of itch to start that. I love getting to have these conversations. It's because of our podcasts and social media that we're talking right now. And it just makes really good connections. And I feel like it's actually made me want to even spread the news about Trick even more by doing work with Trick every day. I'm thinking about hair every day. And it's important to get it out there and let everyone know that you don't have to be ashamed and you can still live your life and no one's going to think any different of you. And it's just part of who you are. It's part of your story. And my story ended up with me being this practitioner that helped people to overcome this. So I guess that would be my answer to those couple of questions in a nutshell, too long of a nutshell.
And then I would love to give you some time to plug your business, plug your podcast. Tell us where we can find you. We want to work with you. Tell
Yes.
us.
Yeah. So for EFT sessions, I do virtual sessions all over the world. I see clients everywhere. I rarely have someone in my same time zone here in Cleveland, Ohio, which is totally fine with me. But you can find me at tapintohealth.net under the client section. There's a link you can click to get a free discovery call scheduled with me, and we can see what you want to work on with either EFT or hypnotherapy. And my podcast is Tap Into Health on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And you can find me on Instagram at tapintohealth_EFT. And any listeners today, if you mention that you heard me on Barbara's podcast, I will give you $25 off your first session.
Mm-hmm.